to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative, exploring whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about to talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect everyone, both locally and globally. And for this, the Arts Hour, I interview local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And if you listen regularly, you'll know that the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. If you're new to the show, welcome, and also welcome back to regular listeners. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. You can hear podcasts of all past shows there, and you can connect with me on social media if you wish. So that's itsaquestionofbalance.com. Well, this week, as my special guest from the arts, I'm pleased to be interviewing award-winning garden designer Juliet Sargent. This year, Juliet designed the modern slavery garden for the Royal Horticultural Society's world-famous Chelsea Flower Show. The garden was a thought-provoking conceptual evocation of modern slavery and was the first social campaign garden in the Flower Show's 104-year history. It was awarded a gold medal for the coveted, it was awarded a gold medal and the coveted People's Choice Prize. Juliet has been winning awards for 20 years for her imaginative solutions to complex garden problems, including awards from the Society of Garden Designers in 2012 and 2015 for sustainability and hard landscaping design. Having previously worked as a medical doctor and with a degree in psychology, Juliet sees gardens and landscapes as central to the health and well-being of individuals and society as a whole. Through her garden design business, Juliet creates truly individual spaces for clients, which help them to connect with the landscape and enjoy the full potential of their gardens. In addition to her degrees in medicine, Juliet has a BA honours degree in garden design and teaches professional garden design to students at KLC School of Design, based at Hampton Court Palace, and also recreational courses to garden enthusiasts. In addition, she's a visiting lecturer for the world's leading museum for art and design, the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. She's former chair of the Society of Garden Designers and is now on the Royal Horticultural Society selection panel for show gardens, and she acts as a judge as well. Juliet's had her gardens featured on the BBC, Channel 4 and Meridian Television, as well as in several magazines. And she also works as a presenter fronting video pieces for the BBC. She writes occasionally for the Garden Press and has co-written a planting book with Catherine Hetherington called A New Naturalism. She's a finalist for the GG2 Leadership Awards 2016, which for 16 years has celebrated leaders and role models in the community. She's also been nominated as a London South Bank Change Maker. Juliet sees garden design as an art form and looks forward to the day when gardens will be fully valued for their contribution to society. Welcome to the show, Juliet.
Hello, Ruth.
Well, it's lovely to have you on. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us from England.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So you've spoken passionately about how you see garden design as an art form. I'm wondering if you can remember the first time you were affected by art of any kind on a deep level, rather than just experiencing it as entertainment, where you really felt the power of art to move us.
Oh, yes, I certainly can. It was a piece by Andy Goldsworthy, the landscape artist, And it was a piece in Sussex, not actually far from where I live. And much of Sussex is chalk hillside. And what Andy did was he just created a path by digging through the topsoil to reveal the white chalk of the landscape and created a path. But the clever thing was that you were only allowed to visit this art piece at midnight on the night of a full moon. And we all arrived in our cars.
Wow.
In the car park, and we were set off individually. You had to walk the path on your own with no torches at all in the dark, just following the moonlight. And it was an amazing experience. First of all, as a woman, I'd never been walking out in the country at midnight on my own before. So that was quite a revelation. But to just follow this white path as it wound through the landscape, through dark dells of rhododendrons and then opening out into glades that were lit by the moon, it was an absolutely breathtaking experience. So simple, but so effective.
Yes, yeah. So how old were you when you experienced that?
Well, actually, I was already a garden designer. I was already a garden designer. But it really opened my mind to the way that gardens can affect our emotions, how landscape can affect our emotions and make us feel one way or another and make us think differently about things as well.
Yes, yeah. And obviously, as I mentioned, you see garden design as an art. Did you grow up in a creative environment, would you say?
Not particularly, but I think what did affect me looking back was that I was one of those slightly feral children who was sent out to play until tea time and just came back when I got hungry. And looking back, I think it was that connection with landscape that really, I remember hours and hours of imaginative play in the landscape. I think that was where it all started, really.
Yes, yeah.
A sense that landscape is more than just something nice to look at.
Yes, yeah. And I think, for a lot of children, I don't want to make sweeping generalizations, but, we tend to think the children used to spend more time outside. And I know when I was a child, you were using sort of leaves as little plates and you were, kind of using nature. I can't remember what flowers they were now, but they had like this little thing where you could, it looked like a little black needle and you could run your finger along it and the orange pollen would come out the end. So we would like pretend we were nurses, and that would be a little injection. So there used to be, I think, a lot more creative play associated with nature. Would you agree?
I think so, yes, and also, dare I say it, slightly dangerous play. I would go off to the woods with my friends and make fires, and steal rhubarb from the gardener's patch and try and cook it over a fire. Things that I think possibly are not as available to children these days. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. What was your first experience of actual gardening?
Oh, that was when I was about seven. My mother was a relatively keen gardener. She was a single mum, so she didn't have that much time, but she was a relatively keen gardener. But she gave me a corner of the garden. I think it's probably because she didn't know what to do with it. Mm. And said, that's your corner. You can do whatever you like. And I decided to make it into a rockery. Being the 1970s, they were very fashionable at that time. And I, bought some seeds, and I wanted to create a waterfall, but of course I had no idea about pumps and the mechanics of the whole thing. So I just spent hours and hours running to the top of my little mound of rocks and pouring the water down, and just imagining that I'd created this fantastic Niagara effect. And it did occupy me for hours and hours. So, yeah, that was my first experience of gardening.
Did gardening seem creative to you then, or was it more about being in touch with nature?
I think it was more about being in touch with nature and just having fun. I didn't know that I was being creative and imagining, but of course, I was immersed in storytelling in my mind of what was actually going on as I gardened and played. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Your first career was in medicine. I'm wondering what attracted you to become a doctor?
Oh, well, actually, again, it was childhood experiences, because I actually, the reason that I had so much space to play in was that I grew up at a school for troubled and disadvantaged children from the cities. Mm. And my mum worked at that school, and it was a boarding school. The idea in those days was to take children away from their troubled environment, away from London, mm. and give them an opportunity to flourish in the countryside. So they would stay at this boarding school and be educated there. Huh. And I, you know, obviously I made friends with these girls, and I realised that a lot of their care was prescribed by a psychiatrist who would come and visit. Mm. And I wanted to be that person who, you know, who was waited for. They would wait for the psychiatrist to come and say what was the best thing to help this girl or that mm. girl. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to be somebody, you know, who's waited for in that mm. way? People want to listen to what you have to say about something. So that was why I went into medicine, originally to be a psychiatrist, because I was interested in what was troubling these girls that I grew up with, really.
Mm. Mm. Interesting. You went on to become a doctor for several years, but then you became disillusioned with that. I'm wondering what led you then to garden design. Was it a fairly straight route, or was it a sort of winding path?
Well, it was really just chance. I was one Sunday I was at home sort of moaning about my job, as people often do, and my husband was reading a Sunday supplement, a colour supplement in the newspaper, which was describing the new garden design degree courses, because there'd never been garden design degree courses in the UK before, and he just tossed it over to me and said, well, you know, if you're so fed up with medicine, why don't you leave and do a garden design course?
Hmm.
And I thought, oh, okay, I will. So I just arranged for an interview. And originally the idea was actually just to have a break from medicine and, you know, sort of recharge my batteries. But by the time I'd finished my garden design degree, I'd been out of medicine for 3 years, and I didn't want to go back, really.
Mm.
So it was a sort of gentle easing out of medicine, yes.
Yes, yeah. Well, if you just joined us, I'm speaking to my special guest from the arts this week, award-winning garden designer Juliet Sargent. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com. It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Express yourself. Ann & Mark's Art Party is the largest and wildest arts festival in the Bay Area, running September 24th through October 1st at Santa Clara County Fairgrounds. With 34,000 square feet of gallery space, music, dance, art cars, food trucks, fire, fashion and film, described as Burning Man in a tux, it's like nothing you've ever experienced before, and it benefits Silicon Valley Creates. The largest, most diverse art event the Bay Area has ever seen. This year's theme is Alice in Wonderland through the Looking Glass. You're more than just a viewer, you become a participant. Come along to Ann & Mark's Art Party, September 24th through October 1st at Santa Clara County Fairgrounds. For more information, visit artpartysj.com. artpartysj.com. That's artpartysj.com. Express yourself.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second-generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, award-winning garden designer Juliet Sargent, who this year won a gold medal at the Royal Horticultural Society's world-famous Chelsea Flower Show. And I just wanted to let you know, if you'd like more information about Juliet and her gardens, you can go to her website, julietdesigns.co.uk. So that's J-U-L-I-E-T designs.co.uk. So before the break, we were talking about how Juliet moved from medicine to training, doing a BA in garden design. I imagine it's quite hard to get into garden design, Juliet, and build up a reputation. How did you begin?
You're right. It is quite hard to make a living as a garden designer. And our tutors told us that it would be at least 3 years after qualifying before we actually, you know, were able to put bread on the table. And that was really the case. You just have to slowly build up the trust of your clientele. And it's a matter of just slowly building a portfolio. And a lot of garden designers will do other things like garden maintenance or writing or possibly teaching as well in England, yes.
Yes, yeah. Some people may think of garden design as being artful, but perhaps not as being an art form. Why do you think of it in that way?
Oh, well, I think garden design can be, not always is, but can be an opportunity not only for creativity, but for communicating ideas, communicating a vision. Mm. And those ideas can be quite complex.
Yes.
So in the same way that a painting could be a beautiful landscape or a vase of flowers, nothing wrong with that, a painting can also have metaphor, tell a story, be controversial, be political. And I think it's exactly the same for gardens. It can be a bed of roses or it can be full of meaning, metaphor and ideas.
Mm. And I've also heard you talk before about how it embodies several aspects of different arts, for instance, maybe the colour, like from painting, or the form of sculpture, or the space design of maybe architecture.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when I'm looking for inspiration, I'll often go to the other art forms. And what I love about garden design is that, for me, it really is a bit of all of them. With sculpture, you have the three-dimensional forms and the textures, and the use of different materials, which we have a fantastic palette of materials that we use in gardens. Not just plants, of course, but hard landscaping materials, stone, glass, metal. And we are creating spaces for people to inhabit in the same way that an architect does. You've probably heard the expression rooms of the garden. Well, we're creating those rooms for people to inhabit and for people to do different things in the different areas. So we will deliberately create an atmosphere that's relaxing if people want to relax, or an atmosphere that's uplifting if people want a party garden, in the way that an architect will. But what I really love about gardens is that fourth dimension of time. The way that there's an unpredictability. When you're working with nature, you can learn as much as you want to for years and years and years about plants, but they'll never do exactly what you think because it's so complex.
Yes,
and so there's always that unpredictability, which is humbling. You know, you cannot control it all, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, there's the aspect of time in that over the years the garden will mature and change, but then there's also the aspect of time in terms of the seasons and what the garden will look like through different times of the year. How do you plan for that?
Well, there's a little bit of information in the books, but it's most of the information just comes from years and years of observation. When I was doing my degree, we had to do life drawing each week, and I just couldn't see what the point was, and especially as I was no good at it. But in the end, I learned that it was all about observation. And with plants and their development, not just through the seasons and the years, but also through the day, they change through the day.
Oh, interesting,
to learn what they do and also how they affect each other, you know, how the plants work in communities together, how their different growth rates, their different habits affect each other. And there's nothing to compensate just from experience and observation.
Yes, yeah, that's really true about through the day. I remember going to an art gallery once, and gallery owner, I was looking at a painting and he was like, oh, look at it, you know, through, and he had this light, special light that could show the painting through different lights in the day, you know, from sort of dawn to night. And as he went through the fading of the light, it was amazing how different the painting looked, you know, through all these different things. And obviously with a garden, there's much more complexity than that coming from just the natural environment.
Yes, one of my favourite times of day is dusk. And just sometimes, quite rarely, but just sometimes, you get particularly the blues and the purples just really sing and fluoresce in the dusky light. And it's such a beautiful thing, fleeting and ephemeral, but there's nothing, you know, nothing to match it. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. How does it feel for the tools of your art to be living things in the main? I know you use some hard landscaping, but do you consider the feel and energy of the plants in your designs?
Probably not so much. I certainly take into account their forms and the way that the forms of the plant affect the way that we feel about them. So when we look at a particular plant, it will have an effect on our the way we feel, respond to it.
Yes.
But I'm not so concerned with the way the plants are feeling. Is that what you meant?
Well, I guess I was wondering.
I don't find myself singing to them or anything like that.
So you're not with Prince Charles on that
one,
not
then. Okay, sorry.
I suppose I was thinking also of how, maybe you would describe that more to the form, but how certain plants feel different, you know, depending on whether they're sort of prickly or whether they're soft or they're lush or they're, you know,
ooh,
waxy.
Yes.
Yes. But maybe we would just use different words to describe that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think you're right. Different plants have different characters and personalities, I would say. So when I'm trying to create a specific atmosphere in a space, I will choose plants that I feel lend themselves and speak to that atmosphere that I'm trying to create. So I'll have an idea, a vision in my mind of what I'm trying to communicate, really, in that space. Am I trying to communicate nostalgia, for example? Or am I trying to communicate hope for the future? And the plants that I choose, yes, they're very carefully chosen to have physical attributes that I feel communicate that.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you won a gold medal and the People's Choice Prize at the Chelsea Flower Show for your modern slavery garden. Can you describe it for us? I will put some pictures up on my website, and there's also a website you can go to, modernslaverygarden.com. But if you could give us a description of it for us radio listeners, that would be great.
Yes, yeah. Well, I wanted to really remind viewers who came to visit the Chelsea Flower Show and people who see the images of the garden that modern slavery is something that is actually happening in every country. You know, when I first found out about it, I sort of thought of it as something that was perhaps happening in developing countries and couldn't possibly be happening in England, but it is in every country and every neighbourhood. And so what I did was use the idea of doors, ordinary front doors, that you and I might have in our houses, and the fact that modern slavery is a crime that's hidden behind closed doors.
Mm.
So as you approached the garden, it looked brightly coloured. The doors were blue and red and yellow, and the planting matched the colours. So again, it was very vibrant planting, and the planting to me represented people's front gardens and the sort of joyous freedom that we enjoy.
Mm.
But then as you looked deeper into the centre of the garden, you would notice that it was black in there and there was no plant life, and the backs of the doors in that central part of the garden was, the backs of the doors was black, and that of course represented the captive space inside behind the closed doors.
Mm. How did the idea come about for this garden, and how did you become involved as the designer?
Well, it wasn't actually my idea to do the Chelsea Flower Show. It was the idea of a group of people who have been campaigning for some time about the issue of modern slavery. And they were instrumental in pushing through the Modern Slavery Act, which was passed by the British Parliament in 2015. So this group of people had been working for some time. And they happened also to be keen gardeners. And they were thinking, well, how can we find a way to bring this to people's attention? And they just said, well, the Chelsea Flower Show has a footfall of 160,000 people over a week and is viewed by millions of people across the globe. Why don't we do something there? So a genius idea, I think. And they then asked me to design the garden for it.
Right. All art is about communication, and clearly the modern slavery garden is addressing a very difficult subject through art. I'm wondering what you think the advantages are of approaching a topic like this through art rather than in you know, more direct ways of just listing statistics and figures and things.
Yeah, what I think art does and gardens can do is really affect people's hearts.
Mm.
People looking at statistics, you know, you read the statistics and yes, to a certain extent you're moved, but it doesn't really move you as deeply as standing in a space that communicates to you, or looking at an artwork, or listening to a piece of music similarly.
Mm.
I think the arts have a way of really connecting with people's hearts, and I do believe that when we're moved emotionally by a subject, that's when we actually act on it.
Mm.
So I believe that if we want people to be moved to make change over issues like modern slavery, important issues, then moving their heart is one way to do it, and that's why arts are so important.
Yes, and of course much of art conveys non-verbal messages that are visceral, as you're saying, rather than intellectual. Mm. And so it is getting, as you say, into a deeper level with people rather than them just sort of in the, being in their head about it.
Yeah. And also, I think the other thing is that you're off with art and with a garden like the Modern Slavery Garden, you're offering a subject to people, and they, in a sense, they can take as much from it as they want. So the great thing that we found with the Modern Slavery Garden was that people were reading all sorts of things into it according to their own experiences of life. And it was great to see young children. I had some chats with an 8-year-old who, you know, just very simply I asked her, do you understand? And she said, well, yes, I'm standing here outside and this is the happy place and inside is the place where the slaves are. You know, as simple as that.
Yes.
But then, of course, older people, intellectuals who'd studied slavery were looking at it in a very different way. And I think that's, again, something that art can do, allow you to engage in different ways.
Absolutely. The garden was the first social campaign garden in the Chelsea Flower Show's history. Were you concerned at all as to how it might be received?
Well, my first concern was that the RHS wouldn't accept the design. But to their credit, they didn't bat an eyelid. They accepted it with no reservations or hesitations at all. So good on you, RHS. And that's Royal Horticultural Society. I was a little bit concerned about how it would be received. But we had quite a lot of interest even before the garden was built.
Yes.
And we could tell from that that people were really interested in the subject.
Yeah.
By the time it was built, we knew that we'd hit on something that was really engaging for people.
Yeah. And remarkably, for a subject that most people don't know much about, I mean, there are just tens of millions of slaves still around the world, aren't there? And as you say, in Western, what we think of as civilized societies as well. And I understand some former slaves were involved with the garden in a small way. Can you tell us how?
Yes, we worked closely with the Salvation Army. They have the contract in the UK to look after victims who are rescued from slavery situations. So they come out of slavery and they're interviewed by the police, and then they're looked after and rehabilitated by the Salvation Army. And they were really great, really enthusiastic about the project. And when some of their clients heard about the Modern Slavery Garden, they wanted to be involved in some way. And these clients live in the south of England in a safe house. They have to be protected, so they're in a safe house. And actually, life is pretty grim for them, even though they've been rescued. There's nothing in the safe house. And they have an allotment, which they love. And actually, they told us a lot about the way the allotment helps them with the whole healing process. And they offered to help grow the oak trees. We had some small oak trees in the garden. And so we took the saplings down to them and spent a day planting them on the allotment. And it was just so nice to spend that time with them and to hear how important gardening was to them.
Yes.
In their recovery.
Yeah. And there's a larger oak in the middle of the garden that the little saplings are around. What does that oak represent?
Well, it represents the work of William Wilberforce, who was the British politician who was responsible for pushing through Parliament the first anti-slavery bill in the 1800s. And William Wilberforce was reluctant to take on this campaign. A circle of friends, were sort of pressing him to take this act through Parliament. And he finally made the decision when he was actually standing under an oak tree in the British countryside. And so that tree is called the Wilberforce Oak, and you can still visit the site where it stood today in the just south of London. So the tree in the Modern Slavery Garden represented that Wilberforce Oak where he made his decision to take the first anti-slavery act to Parliament.
Interesting.
And I particularly wanted to have saplings, little oak trees around the base of it, because for me, they represented the ongoing work of people like the Salvation Army and the anti-slavery charities who are still working today to rid us of modern slavery. So it's as if their work is seeded from the work of Wilberforce.
Oh. So
that was the idea of the Oaks, yeah.
Yeah, oh, what a lovely idea. Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my guest from the arts this week, award-winning garden designer Juliet Sargent. And just to let you know again how you can find more information from her, this interview will be up on our website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, with photographs, information, and also links to Juliet's website. So if you don't remember the website names, you can just go to the show website and you'll be able to find the links there. But I will give you the websites. They are juliettedesigns.co.uk and modernslaverygarden.com. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back with more conversation with Juliet after these messages. Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel, and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda Yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, award-winning garden designer Juliet Sargent, who this year at the Royal Horticultural Society's world-famous Chelsea Flower Show won a gold medal for her modern slavery garden, which we have been talking about. And Several members of the royal family came to view your garden at the Chelsea Flower Show, Juliet. Do you think that that helps to get the message out, as this garden, you know, did have a message?
Oh, yes, certainly. In fact, we were supported really from a very early stage by Princess Eugenie, who's the Queen's, one of the Queen's granddaughters. She actually visited one of the Salvation Army safe houses and was very supportive of the project. And I think she invited some of her relatives to come and have a look and point the garden out to them on the evening of the gala at the Chelsea Flower Show, yes. It was great to have their support.
Yeah. Another aspect of your garden appearing at the Chelsea Flower Show was that you were the first black designer to take part. And I understand you didn't realise this until it was pointed out in the press. How did that make you feel?
Yeah, I was, on the one hand, I was surprised. But then when I thought about it, because I've been designing gardens and visiting Chelsea for 20 years now, and then when I sort of stopped and thought about it, I thought, well, actually, yes, you know, there aren't that many black designers who pop up at Chelsea. So, it was an interesting observation, yes.
And have you found barriers in your profession through being black, or would you say the issue is more about perhaps wanting to increase diversity in garden design rather than combating prejudice?
Yeah, I think that's the case, exactly, Ruth. I've been teaching professional garden design now for about 15 years, and I can't remember a single black African student. So it's not that there's any kind of sinister plot. I don't think it is about prejudice at all. In fact, I think gardening and the world of landscape and gardening is a very open and welcoming culture, but I do think there are probably issues around accessibility for financial reasons. I mentioned before, it does take time to get someone running. It's expensive to train, and also I think there probably is a lack of a role model that young black people probably just don't think of it really, because they don't really see it as something that might be available or interest them.
Yes. So unintentionally through this, you've had a good effect in that sense of being very prominently displayed.
Yes. And I have been contacted actually by a number of young people who sort of said, oh, yes, it's great. And oh, I think I might have a go at garden design. So that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I think also probably with this garden, the Modern Slavery Garden, it's got a sort of edginess to it that perhaps young people wouldn't normally associate perhaps with gardening, you know, especially in the British tradition of gardens. So perhaps that also is appealing.
Yes, I think so. And we had actually at the show, we had a lot of young people volunteered to man the garden and explain to people what it was all about. And it was great to see young people getting involved with Chelsea, because it is, I mean, let's face it, it does tend to be a slightly older demographic. So, I think it's great to be addressing issues that just capture the interest of younger people, definitely.
Yeah. The 19th century poet Alfred Austin said, "Show me your garden and I shall tell you what you are." Do you think we can reveal our inner selves through our gardens?
Oh, I do. And I often, when I'm teaching sort of garden design to garden enthusiasts, I encourage them to do that. I sort of say that if you need a fence or you need a path, don't just nip down to your local garden centre and buy something off the shelf. Think about something that you can design, not necessarily expensively, but you know, just design from pebbles you've collected on the beach, or broken, you know, your grandmother's broken teapot, or something you've picked up from your holidays. You know, I think it's great to incorporate something personal and use your own creativity in your own personal garden space. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You have a background in psychology, and I have a Master of Science degree in counselling. And one of my favourite psychologists is Alice Miller. And she thought that the arts could help process trauma. And some people even think the arts can have a healing effect. And you talk about imaginative solutions to complex garden problems. I'm wondering whether you see any potential for the art of garden design and art in general to help people work through other kinds of problems and challenges they might have.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yes, I'm actually working on a project at the moment with a graphic designer. He wanted to collaborate on a garden, and he wants to explore working with veterans who, as you know, often suffer PTSD and psychological and emotional problems from what they've been through. And he wanted to explore both using words, because he's a graphic artist, and talking to them and running workshops where they can explore words, but then also using those words in the garden context and creating sculptures, art, and graphic spaces. We're not quite sure how it's going to work, but I think it's going to be really exciting. And so as part of our preparation for that, we have been talking to veterans who are being helped by a charity in the UK called Combat Stress. And at Combat Stress, they have artistic workshops, and they find them very, very helpful.
In times past, trees used to be thought of as sacred, and people generally had a much closer, more personal, even spiritual association with nature and the land. I'm wondering how you see the role of the garden in this age of technology, where we seem to be, you know, going further and further away from the natural world in many ways.
Yeah, well, I with my sort of interest in health and psychology, I'm absolutely fascinated by the research that is emerging, you know, over the last 10, 20 years. A lot of psychologists and scientists have been discovering that our increasing disconnect from nature and the landscape is having an effect on our health.
Yeah.
And there's more and more evidence that the more access that people have to green space, public and private green space, that the more healthy they'll be in terms of, I mean, the list is incredible of advantages. You know, there's reduced cardiovascular disease, reduced respiratory disease, reduced obesity, stress, depression, and even things like reduced crime and domestic violence if people have better green space. And amazingly, also improving green space and people's access to it improves social cohesion and creates communities. So I'm really looking forward to more information from the scientists about not only these benefits that we're seeing, but also what's mediating them. What is it about nature and green space that is so good for us? We all know it's good for us, but what is it? How is it happening? And I think as designers, it would be great for us to be told more about how we can design spaces that are good for people. So that in a way, our design becomes evidence-based. I would really love more information on that,
Sometimes it feels in the developed world that the world is becoming one big city. How important is it for us to maintain public landscape as a natural space in a cultural art form, do you feel?
I think it's really important. And I think this is one of the reasons why I think it's so important for gardening or garden making to be considered an art form, because I think that raises its value in the eyes of society and the people that hold the purse strings. It's not just growing a row of cabbages and sticking a few roses in. If it's seen as an art form that can contribute to health, well-being, and society, then hopefully it will, well, the bottom line is be given a little bit more money. To improve people's lives.
Well, this is the sad thing with the arts. I mean, they're so fundamental to everybody's life experience. I mean, if you took the arts away from people's lives, they would be desolate. And yet they're always the first thing to be cut. You know, they're just sort of seen as a peripheral expense in terms of budgeting. And I think it's so short-sighted, because the benefits are so wide-reaching. And I think what you're saying, particularly about this and with public spaces, you know, especially in cities, you know, if people can get out and enjoy, you know, the fresh air and beauty and meet up with other people and just have time to think in an environment where they're not enclosed, you know, there's huge benefits that translate into all areas. You've talked a lot about health, but I think also in terms of crime and antisocial behavior and things like that. So it is disappointing, I think, that the arts get such a shoddy deal sometimes. And you know, when you look back in time, it's really the art that has survived from all previous civilizations when everything else is gone.
And also it's relatively cheap. The benefits that arts provide are relatively cheap solutions to, you know, society's ills. There have been some great studies looking at the benefits of public parks. If you take a public park and look at financial benefits to the community, to business in the area, raising house prices, etc., the amount that you actually spend on the park, you get back many, many times over from the benefits, financial benefits that it creates around it. Even if you're just looking at money, it does make sense.
Yes, yeah. Well, we're coming towards the end of the show, so I just wanted to ask you, is the Modern Slavery Garden going to be able to be viewed again? I mean, obviously people can go to the website, but for some people, are they going to be able to actually experience it again?
Yeah, well, we've had lots of towns in England interested in hosting it, and I've actually yesterday just come back from Hull in the north of England. I had really exciting meetings up there because next year, 2017, Hull is the European City of Culture. Mm. And they are really keen to have the Modern Slavery Garden. And we're hoping that we will collaborate with the Art College there, with the College of Journalism, that students will be writing about it. We're hoping to run a schools program so that children can come and look and think about slavery and maybe write poems and paintings. So I think watch what's happening in Hull. That's a really exciting possibility for next year for the Modern Slavery Garden.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thanks so much again for coming on the show. It's been lovely talking to you, and I wish you all the best with all your new gardens that you're creating, as well as this one.
Thank you, Ruth.
And just to let listeners know again, if you want to find out more information, you can go to the show website. It's aquestionofbalance.com. That's the easy way. There'll be links there to Juliet's websites, photographs, information about her, and also the audio from this interview if you want to tell other people about it. But I will just give you the websites. It's julietdesigns.co.uk. That's J-U-L-I-E-T designs.co.uk and Modern Slavery Garden. And just to remind you again, if you go to the show website, it's aquestionofbalance.com, there are podcasts of all previous shows. We've had some really interesting topic discussions on all kinds of different things and arts guests, and you can easily find them on the homepage. There's a tab for topics and a tab for guests. If you click on those, it brings up photographs and information about all the guests and what they do and what their name is, and also with the topics. It tells you all the topic questions, so it's very easy to choose a podcast to listen to. So I encourage you to go to itsquestionofbalance.com. Thank you for joining me, and I will see you next time.